Well, good Saturday afternoon, everyone. Hope you're having a great day. Hope everyone had a good opening day of dove season last weekend. Yeah. It's felt good to get back outside. It was hot for most of the day, and then it clouded up late in the day and was just really, really nice. So had a good time flying solo today, so to speak. Taylor, this is just going to be it, folks. We're going to have to deal with it. She's got school until she gets all that stuff settled and smoothed out. We're going to give her some time to where she doesn't have to responsibility of doing the show. So we'll get through today. We've got Mr. David Whitaker, who was with SCDNR for 41 years. Talking about shrimp. We all like to eat them and all, and never done it. So with shrimp season coming up, figured it'd be a good thing to do. So we're going to spend some time talking about shrimp on the show. And I do have a good calendar. And Taylor will be back with us when she can. I'm sure she's wishing probably about she's wishing she was with us. In a kind of a reversal and something we need to keep track of, along with some other stuff that's going on. We've talked about the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council trying to close bottom fishing off the coast of South Carolina, impose a 12-mile-an-hour speed limit from the coast all the way out to 60 plus or minus miles off coast shore because the right whales. We had kind of a thing happen last Saturday. There's been avian bird flu has been in some Canadian provinces. And so the USDA APHIS, which is the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, had said, you know, if you're hunting migratory waterfowl in Canada, you know, in these specific provinces and areas, and they had a very complex map and all, said you would not be able to bring any birds harvested in there back to the United States. And that's where they kind of left it. And it assured everybody they weren't going to do anything more. And then last Saturday at 12:58, Ducks Unlimited broke this news that the import, and this is, I don't think this is, there's any mincing words about this. The import of hunter-harvested game birds from Canada has been effectively closed. So the USDA APHIS announced that effective immediately, game birds taken by hunters in Canada will not be permitted to enter the United States, regardless of the province in which they were taken. This reverses a statement a week ago that imports would only be restricted on birds taken in highly pathogenic avian influenza priority control zones. Hunters are left to wonder why APHIS would reverse course on such a consequential decision announced after hours on a holiday weekend with zero notice or opportunity to be heard from stakeholders. That was what Ducks Unlimited CEO Adam Putnam said. DU members are justifiably upset by the absence of science and the total lack of transparency around the sweeping regulation does not appear to have even included the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in its development. And you can, there's a link out here. Ducks.org. And if you go to ducks.org, trying to find out where it was. I copied this from a link. It's on their page. It's in the news section. So, just kind of funny. And kind of funny. The funny part is we're talking about migratory waterfowl here. You know, every duck in Canada is going to migrate across the United States down into Central America. Or, you know, it's going to happen. We're right on the front edge of the migratory season anyway. And they're going to ban anything killed in Canada from coming back in the U.S. when in just a week or so they're all going to start coming here all on their own. I don't know what's going on. This is one of those head-scratchers. It'd be interesting to keep up with this, but just be aware. Get involved, you know, if you like ducks. Get involved with Ducks Unlimited Delta Waterfowl. If you're interested in deer, you got National Deer Alliance. You've got, you know, all these organizations like Rocky Mountain Dove Federation. Get involved so you can stay up on what's going on, or at least subscribe to somebody's newsletter if you don't join, because some of the stuff's going on right now is you just got to wonder what in the world they're talking about, and why are they making some of these decisions? But yeah, we gotta, as of right now, you cannot hunt in Canada and bring back a duck or a goose, period. Don't understand. I do have a calendar. I'm going to go ahead and jump on it right quick. Brought to you by Capital City Lake Murray Country. The U.S. Forest Service, Francis Marion, and Sumter National Forests have opened the application deadlines for the youth and, let's see. Yeah, it's the Tibwin Youth Deer Hunts. It's only the not. You can apply up to September 12th. It's a paper application. And so you got to get on this pretty quick if you want it to them. And you can email them also. But if you go to www.fs.usda.gov/SCNFS. So in other words, you're looking for the Forest Service, USDA government, South Carolina National Forest Service, or the... You can find the applications for those things. I understand they're pretty fun hunts. The Jeff Bailey Memorial Fishing Tournament, September 17th, starting at Safe Daylight till 2 o'clock. It's on Lake Bowen. It is actually put on by the City of Inman, so you can find more information there, which is www.cityofinman.org. Entry fee is $100 per team plus $10 big fish optional. And they got some rules here you can read over and figure out if you want to fish it. It is time for the lakeside, streamside, beach, river sweep in South Carolina. It's all happening September 17th. It's the 33rd annual beach sweep, river sweep. They're having a lakeside litter sweep on Lake Murray. Volunteers needed. The Tiger River Foundation is having one out here in Roebuck, South Carolina on the 17th. If you go to Beach Sweep, River Sweep, it's sweep-scdnr.hub.arcgis.com. But if you do Beach Sweep, River Sweep, South Carolina, it'll take you. They don't need any more site captains, but they do need volunteers at some of the locations. And you can pick locations along the beach, or you can pick any number of locations along the coast. And it's one of those things where you're just, you know, hey, just picking up trash. And they pick it up an inordinate amount of trash. It's amazing. But they have lists of all the locations, and there's bound to be one near you. They have an inland coordinator and a coastal coordinator. And they'd love to have you come out and pick up some trash. Let's see. I thought they had some statistics here, but they don't. So anyway, it's just some. Oh, yeah. 11,235 pounds of trash last year. So, and the 2021 one. Coming up on the 18th, on Lake Hartwell, specifically anywhere on Lake Hartwell, is the Strike King 2022 Big Bass Challenge. The weigh site's going to be Green Pond Landing. They have some weigh-in periods. They have some entry fees. So if you go to Strike King, you can look up the information, enter if you want to. They have weigh periods like 7 to 9, 9 to 11, 11 to 1, and 1 to 3, where the biggest bass that comes in during that time wins a cash prize. And they have some other stuff. And they have a pro night the night before on the 17th from 4 to 7 at the Green Pond Landing and Amphitheater, where you have registration and gift card pickup. That's a good one. Gosh, passed really quick. And I'm not going to have time to get to it. So we'll just save that for later because it's just it's something that can wait. But anyway, we're going to talk about shrimp for the rest of the show. Stay tuned. We got some recipes and... Hopefully you'll learn something and know when you eat one of those wild-caught South Carolina shrimp exactly where it's coming from and how it got to your plate. So hang on, more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. Well, folks, we as I was talking to my guest off the air, it's the outdoors is I don't want to say it's an onion because onions make me cry and I don't like to cry when I'm cooking. But the outdoors, the more layers you peel off, the more information, the more things there are to talk about. And this is one of those things that I've had on my list to get to. I've never been able to get to it until now, so we're going to fit it in now. And it's about something we, if you like seafood, you probably like these. We like to eat them. We can boil them. We can fry them. We can, oh my gosh, you can eat them. I would eat them raw, but, you know, some people might. Forrest Gump and his buddy, I mean, Forrest Gump made a killing off of it, and that's shrimp. And gosh, when there are fresh shrimp at the dock in McClellanville or Charleston or wherever, and you have an opportunity to get some, you need to get some because there's nothing like fresh shrimp, and even a once frozen shrimp is as good as a fresh shrimp, I've been told. So don't hesitate to freeze them and use them during the year. But I gotta say thank you to my guest, Mr. David Whitaker. He's retired from SCDNR, but he's a very active volunteer. He tells me he's working on some stuff down there for him now. But he said after 41 years of talking about shrimp, he can talk about shrimp, and we're all going to find out today. So, David, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thank you for taking your time to do this for me.
Thank you, Roger. I'm looking forward to talking about shrimp. I love to talk about shrimp.
Okay. Now, that's what you said in your email, so I'm going to hold you to it. Take just a moment, first-time guest on the show, and tell us about yourself and what you did for SCDNR all those years, and then we'll jump into it.
Okay. Well, I was first hired at DNR in 1976, and that first winter, we had a real bad winter, and it killed all the shrimp, so I didn't have any shrimp to work on that year. But I worked in shrimp management and applied research for probably about 20 years, and then started moving up the ladder in DNR, ultimately being the assistant director for the Marine Division when I retired.
Wow. A lot of years working for South Carolina then.
Yeah, about 41 years, and I loved every minute of it, and I probably would have kept going had it not been for some circumstances, but
yeah,
economic issues. But
yeah.
Anyhow, I'm still active and still concerned and interested in shrimp. I go down to labs, corral some of those guys, and we'll talk for an hour or so. They probably hate to see me come.
How old habits hard to break.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we do love to eat shrimp. I mean, they are, and pretty much everything else out there likes to eat shrimp. I mean, if you've ever been fishing, you know that trout like shrimp, redfish like shrimp. You know, you've seen shrimp skittering across the top of the water trying to get away from things. Seagulls like shrimp. One of the best pictures I ever took in Charleston was of and I don't know the correct name, the seagull had a black head on it. But he had picked a shrimp off, skipping off the top of the water. And wild shrimp, if you've never really been in contact with a wild shrimp, they have very, very long and what I'll call feelers. There's a scientific name for that, and I'm not sure what it is.
Antenna.
There you go. But it's a brown shrimp, and it's the seagull is probably 4 inches off the water. I'm really zoomed in on it, and those antenna are streaming back behind that shrimp. And I'm thinking, well, it's a beautiful picture, but that seagull is going to have that's a meal.
Yeah, I was standing in front of a big aquarium once with some blue crab in it. And somebody put in some shrimp, and the shrimp antenna was trailing behind him, and that crab grabbed those antennae and wrapped them up around his claw and pulled that shrimp right to him.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm convinced that must be a common way that crabs capture shrimp.
Oh, just reel them in.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, it's, you know, everybody loves to eat them. And they're resident here in South Carolina. I mean, the shrimp, when you get South Carolina shrimp, is it fair to say that they were born and raised in South Carolina?
Yeah. If you get them from a dock here in South Carolina, good odds are that they were caught in South Carolina. A few of the shrimp boats will travel to Georgia or North Carolina occasionally, but they usually sell their product in those states. So what you see here is usually caught here.
I got you. Well, there's a great, DNR has a great, I understand it's a pamphlet. You can download it. It's a PDF off their website. It's Sea Science. It's an informational educational series from the Marine Resources Division, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, and it's titled very simply Shrimp in South Carolina. And I asked Mr. Whitaker if he'd come on and kind of run through this and just give us an overview of shrimp. So like I was telling him, the next time somebody's sitting down to a shrimp dinner, and it's in November, and that shrimp is about 5 inches long and just as juicy and all, that's a white shrimp, and they're bigger in the wintertime. So that's what we're after, David. You think you can get us there?
Sure.
Well, okay. Tell us what kind of shrimp we have in here, and just kind of take us through their early life stock.
Well, these are what we call pinnated shrimp. They're
okay.
Three of those, three species, the white shrimp, pink shrimp, and the brown shrimp. And pinks are fairly rare. They like a sandy bottom, like North Carolina has in the Sounds and down in the Keys of Florida. So we don't have many of those, but our predominant shrimp are white shrimp and brown shrimp. With the white shrimp being caught two times a year, we have a run of what we call the roe shrimp in May and June. These are the spawners, and they're really big. They're 15, 20 to the pound.
Okay.
And then their larvae will come in over the summer and start growing up in the tidal creeks. Your larvae are transported by the tides up into the upper reaches of the estuaries. The shrimp settle out and start growing. But they're in the ocean, the brown shrimp are starting to move out about that time. And that's the bulk of the summer catch, although the catch of brown shrimp has been going down over the last two decades. I believe it has to do with warmer winters. It's a long story, but I think they require some cold water temperatures in the winter to complete their migration into the estuary. But aside from that, we still have them.
Okay.
Just not what we used to have. And North Carolina has more because it's cooler up there.
Sure.
But so in the fall, the young white shrimp that were spawned in the spring are starting to grow, and usually they'll be about the 1st of September, they'll be about 4 or 5 inches, maybe a little bigger. One thing we learned over the years is when you don't have many of them, they grow bigger, grow faster.
Okay.
And if they're really, really abundant, their growth rates are slowed down. And I think it's competition for food and space in the creeks. But at any rate, that's when our shrimp baiting fishery starts in the fall,
okay,
in September. And the commercial trawling for shrimp peaks in September, October, November. And clearly, the later you wait in the year to buy your shrimp, the most likely the bigger they're going to be.
Okay.
If you want really big shrimp, buy those spring shrimp, but they're expensive.
Yeah, they are.
If you like the creek, some people like the creek shrimp, you know, the smaller shrimp for a Creole or something.
Sure. Shrimp salads.
You can get them in August or September, perhaps.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the life history in a nutshell there. One interesting thing about white shrimp is, and we've done a lot of work on this, is the adults, if they're not caught by somebody, they're going to migrate to Florida.
Really?
We've done tagging. My group tagged over 40,000 shrimp, and we had several thousand returns from as far south as Cape Canaveral. And you could watch them go down the coast. We'd have people reporting them from Beaufort, Savannah, right on down the coast. You could just about tell how quickly the school was moving by when the reports came in.
Wow.
But that happens late in the year. Usually as water temperatures decline, those shrimp start heading south. But the small shrimp stay. And they'll stay, and small being 4 inches and less, they'll stay in the estuaries over winter to become our next year's spawners.
Okay.
So those are really important. And if we have a really cold winter, such as 1977 or 79 or 86, all these are 84, 85. Those are all emblazoned on my brain.
But
we haven't had that many cold winters lately.
Not lately, yeah.
So we used to have a situation where we'd lose a lot of them. We'd have to close down the fishery and protect those spawners a lot more. But the last several years, it hasn't been so much of an issue.
Well, we got about a minute and a half left. And I want to ask you a question on the roe shrimp in the spring. As you're most of the time when you're taking out the intestinal tract or whatever you want to call it, or the shrimp that runs down its back, those roe shrimp, that's where the roe is laying too, is it not? They're laying right along there alongside that?
Well, the ovary extends well up into the head and right on along the back and down, as you say, down along both sides of the intestine down into the, almost to the end of the tail. It's starts out sort of yellow.
Right.
And then as they get more and more mature, it turns brown to sort of a olive green when they're really ripe. And if you find, and sometimes you can find them with a spermatophore from the male attached to the bottom of the shrimp. And that's at that point, you know, they're about ready to fertilize those eggs.
And I was amazed. It says in here that a single female can lay between 500 and a million eggs and may spawn several times. That's amazing.
Yeah. In mariculture settings where they grow them in tanks, I think I read that one individual would spawn 6-7 times, but the number of eggs drops every time by about half.
Sure.
They can spawn right on. And you don't need a whole lot to be an adequate spawn. We still protect those spawners regardless, but for a while. And once the DNR determines that they've had adequate time to spawn, then we let people catch them. And I know some people still think, well, you're ruining the fall crop. But once they've spawned, you can have too many.
Cool.
If you have a whole lot of those roe shrimp. And cool. You can have so many that they don't even grow very well in the fall.
Wow. Well, hang on, folks. We're going to take a break, come back with more about shrimp with David Whitaker from DNR. Hang on. And welcome back to another segment of Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thank you for being here today. I want to thank David Whitaker for being here talking about shrimp. David, so far, my stomach hasn't started to rumble. My mouth is, my saliva glands are starting to work a little bit. I think we need to talk about eating shrimp. And when we were getting all this set up, you said we could even talk about cooking. So for somebody who finds them at the local grocery store, they're wild caught South Carolina shrimp or North Carolina shrimp, or they get them off the dock in Charleston or McClellanville or Beaufort. What is the easiest way to cook a shrimp, and how do you go about it?
Well, I think the old tried and true method is just simply to boil shrimp. And, what I do is I boil shrimp in regular unseasoned water.
Okay.
Just bring them up to a boil and cut the water off. And usually I pour the water off pretty quickly. The longer you leave it on there, the tougher they're going to get. So, not that they can get very tough. But,
so how long is that period? When you bring it to a boil, you bring it to a rolling boil, drop them in, and let them boil for how long?
I let it get almost to a rolling boil, but I don't overcook them.
Okay.
And then I pour that water off, and I like to take seafood seasoning at that point. I don't know if you want me to mention the name I use, but
what? Go ahead.
I use Tony Cacheret.
Okay.
That Louisiana sauce. Powder.
Okay.
And maybe you add a little salt to it too. Some people just put salt, but then, you know, shake it up, shake up the pot and put the cover back on, let it stand there for 15 minutes or so. And because my belief is, that I've learned from doing this for a long time, is that when you pour that seasoned water off, all the seasoning goes with it. And those shrimp to me just taste like they were boiled in water. So that's the way I do it. It may be contrary to what a lot of people believe or want to do. But
that sounds good to me.
So yeah, I had an old shrimp captain show me that. Correct.
Well, I mean, hey, old shrimp captains know the work and know how to eat too. So I'd trust them too. We'll go with yours then. I'll quit seasoning mine in the water. I'll wait till I get them off, then season them.
Yeah, I'll try that.
I will. I have to try it next time around. But we have been. We talked a little bit about shrimp in the first segment, a little about the different types of shrimp we got in South Carolina and you know, their comings and goings. And I wanted to ask you, and you kind of let it out before I could even ask you, but you talked about the white shrimp migrating to Florida. And I said everything goes to Florida in the winter. Do they come back up in the springtime, or are they pretty much just going to reside in Florida until somebody catches them or they die?
Well, my first thought back when we were doing tagging was that they migrate down there and we have a cold winter, they come back and they repopulate. But so we went down there and tagged about 4,000 shrimp, and I think two got as far as Brunswick coming back. And we had to just decided that they just didn't migrate back. And it was a little disappointing because I was trying to influence some regional management on the shrimp stocks. But the more I thought about it, though, if there's millions and millions going south and only 1% come back, however they come back, whether currents or active swimming, that's plenty for repopulation.
I got you.
So it doesn't require a whole bunch of them.
I got you. Well, it's, you know, it is, as with most things in here in South Carolina, in the outdoors, you know, they're a renewable resource. Shrimp are renewable. White-tailed deer are renewable. The thing that's probably the most delicate part of anything is the habitat they have to grow up. And you spoke a little bit about this when you said, you know, when there's not many of them, they tend to be bigger. And when there's a lot of them, they tend to be smaller. And that's, I guess that would be the carrying capacity of the environment around them with the food available and the habitat available. And it's, and those saltwater nurseries along the coast of South Carolina are so important. And that's where a lot of these shrimp have their, that's where they grow up. And it's as we have a lot more development, we need to be very careful about how we manage those nursery habitats and all. So talk a little bit about those, I would say the early years, but maybe the early months of a shrimp's life and how they grow up and when do they start moving back out into the area where we can talk about some of the shrimp baiting season.
All right. Well, when they come in, they're what we term post larvae, and the white shrimp are about 5 millimeters in length, and brown shrimp are about 10 or 12 millimeters in length, so they're pretty small.
Sure.
They ride the flood tides in, and we think they probably ride several tides. They'll ride in a flood tide, settle to the bottom, wait till the next flood tide, and then move again, kind of hopping up the river, so to speak. And they'll largely go right up into the tidal creeks, right up into the very shallow waters. And you'll find them after a week or two with a cast net, maybe an inch in length.
Okay.
And they'll stay in those tidal creeks typically for 6 to 8 weeks till they get to be about, I think millimeters, but about 4 inches.
Okay.
When they start kind of turning and heading, and certainly by the time they're 5 inches, they're going to be pretty much out in the rivers or down in the lower reaches of the estuaries, like in Charleston Harbor.
Okay.
So the amount of acreage of Bartina habitat in those tidal creeks, the shallow creeks, is really critically important. And it's not only that, but it's also that the water coming down the rivers, you need some fresh water. These shrimp do better at intermediate salinities, and you get faster growth, we think, and probably maybe better survival when you have a little bit of fresh water coming down. So if you have a drought situation,
or
rivers are diverted for whatever reason or something, then that has some harmful effects on shrimp. You know, shrimp, the crabs, and lots of fishes down in the lower reaches of the estuary. So that's in a nutshell what's really important, I think. And what's interesting to me is in Louisiana, they produce more shrimp than we do, but they have a lot bigger marshes. But,
sure.
They also don't have tides. Our shrimp have to deal with the tides.
Yeah.
And now what happens in the tidal creek is at low tide, the dissolved oxygen levels drop very low during the summer, and the big fish leave, but the shrimp can tolerate it.
Okay.
So it's I don't know whether it's an evolved thing or just luck, but those shrimp can tolerate it, and some other species too. And while the big predators have to go out in the open water and don't come back in till flood tide, so what, that works out.
What are the differences? Because I know when you're red fishing up in the salt marsh and all, you'll see shrimp scattering, you know, skittering across top of them. What is the difference between like a grass shrimp and one of the other types of shrimp?
Well, grass shrimps in the group Palamonidae, which is, they just don't get any bigger than about an inch,
okay,
inch and a half maybe. Whereas the pinnated shrimp, which are the browns, whites, pinks, and some other species, will get much larger. In fact, a fella sent me a big shrimp one day. He caught off Kiowa, I believe. Turned out to be the world record white shrimp. It was 10 inches long.
Oh my gosh.
And, you couldn't hardly get your fingers around it.
No. That's a big old shrimp. Got about a minute and a half or so. What do shrimp eat? I mean, we talked about where they stay, where they grow up, and all that. What are they eating on the whole time they're growing from those, you know, millimeter lengths to the 4 inches or 5 inches where they start moving back out again?
Well, they're eating tiny microorganisms in the mud. And in fact, they're basically eating the mud and digesting what they can digest. That's why the vein or the intestine is always black looking. It's full of mud. And brown shrimp are a little more of a predator.
Okay.
Than white shrimp, and they're going after some of the larger little crustaceans and things, worms and things.
Okay.
But the white shrimp's more what we call an omnivore, and eats vegetation and vegetation meaning single cell little or small algae. And they'll also eat the occasional amphipod or something if they can get a hold of it, or worm.
Okay. Wow. Interesting stuff. Gosh, don't have but like 45 seconds. I hate to get started talking about something else. I tell you what, folks, let's, goodness, we got some more stuff. We're going to talk about, I'm going to get another recipe for shrimp when we come in the next break. So get your pens out, and then in the interim, let's listen to some music. We'll take a break and be back. More Woods and Water Cycling on the other side of the break. Hang on. All right, welcome back to Woods and Water South Carolina, the final segment for today. We've really enjoyed talking to Mr. David Whitaker about shrimp and shrimp here in South Carolina. And I got a new recipe to try next time I get some shrimp. I'm going to leave the seasoning off until after. I'm going to use Old Bay. I'm just an Old Bay guy. Sorry, Tony. I've had some of Tony's stuff, though, and it's good. So, you know, hey, whichever one you choose, you can't go wrong because they're both really good. But give us another one. I want to hear you. I want to hear what other shrimp recipe you'd throw out there.
Well, I would give you my wife's recipe for
Ooh.
For shrimp with a spaghetti with a white sauce, but I don't know it. Just sit there and I eat it.
And
but,
I would and I'd keep that one secret. That one sounds pretty good.
that's her favorite. But, I'll tell you the Frogmore stew or Beaufort stew, Beaufort bog, whatever people call it.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that. And and the way I do that, I start out and boil my some people put the potatoes in.
Okay.
And I boil those, set them aside, don't get them really soft, and then I boil the corn. And while I'm boiling that, I'm boiling also with the sausage in there, cut up lengths of sausage.
Right.
You want that sausage to actually be in there with the potatoes too. But you want to pull those potatoes and corn out because they'll overcook, and particularly the potatoes. And once you get it back to a boil, you can drop those shrimp in for just a minute or two, along with all the potatoes and everything else back in there for just for a short period of time. And again, like I season after I get it all out.
I was waiting to see. do you go ahead and, you know, in a traditional way to serve it, you know, just some brown paper on the table, do you lay it all out there and then season it, or are you seasoning it in the pot and then to let it sit in the pot for a few minutes?
Yeah, I like to do it in the pot. You know, I kind of like a hot taste, but okay. Some people complain that I put too much hot sauce on it. I leave it in the pot and let it kind of steam in there a little bit, and then. But the trick is not to overcook those potatoes and then they become sticky and messy.
Or just kind of disintegrate.
Yeah.
That's the other way. If you cook them too long, the potatoes just kind of disintegrate and you got little white chunks floating around that used to be red potatoes.
That's right.
Oh, man. Now my mouth is really going. Okay. That's it. You know, we talked about a lot about shrimp. We talk about, you know, the kinds we have here in South Carolina, where they live, where they grow up, some of the issues with them. You did mention that there is a black gill disease that they can get, been around, but and you're really not a problem for them in the long term then?
Well, this black gill is a parasite that infects the gills in terms of black, what we call melanization. And then they can't breathe as well. But as soon as they molt the next time in a week or so, they'll get brand new gills.
Okay.
But those will turn black in another week or two. So it does impair perhaps their ability to breathe and it makes them maybe a little more vulnerable to predators.
Gotcha.
But doesn't kill them
outright. Very good. Talk for a minute. Let's take a minute and talk about the commercial fishery. You know, the romance of the shrimp boat sitting in Shem Creek or up in McClellanville or whatever. Take a couple of 3 minutes and talk about how those shrimp boats operate.
Okay. Well, most of them, the larger ones at least, have what we call outriggers, two long extensions from the deck of the boat. Those are dropped to the side, and each one pulls usually one large net, maybe a 50 or 60 foot wide trawl net. And they'll pull a tow for probably usually 2 to 3 hours. It depends on what they're catching, because they pull a little net, a mini net, I'd say. They call it a tri net, T-R-Y, on the side. And they'll sample every 15 minutes just to see what's there. And if they're not catching anything, they may move. But if they're catching a lot and they know that net may be filling up, they'll cut their toe short.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, a net like that, they're towing. How many thousands of pounds? I mean, are we talking thousands of pounds of shrimp if they pull that net in full?
Potentially, but most times you're talking about something like, in a good catch, 300 or 400 pounds, maybe 500 pounds. So it's I've heard stories of huge catches, but and a lot of catch stories of three shrimp in them. kind of like Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I was just fixing to say it. I saw that film in Forrest Gump, that scene.
Well, you know, after Hurricane Hugo and all that fresh water flushed all the shrimp into the ocean, the shrimpers had a bonanza out there. They caught a bunch of shrimp, I think.
Yeah. You know, the commercial shrimping is probably, would you say, on the downside of what it used to be? Any reason for that, you think?
Yeah. Used to go in the mouth of St. Helena Sound, for instance, and I'd see 25, 30 boats, maybe 50, and now you see 3, 4, 5. What's amazing to me is they're still catching pretty good quantities of shrimp in the total for the state. So I guess their catch rates have improved some.
Yeah.
But it's a fishery somewhat in decline, mostly from economic reasons, importations of foreign shrimp, driving the price down, and fuel prices going through the roof.
Sure.
Particularly lately, I guess. I don't know how they make it. They used to tell me they needed at least 200 pounds just to break even. And that used to be a pretty good day when they'd get 200 pounds.
Wow.
Diesel fuel was, you know, 50 cents a gallon.
Wow. $6 a gallon. That's a lot different.
Aren't many new boats entering the fishery. And you lose some every year, unfortunately. And there aren't, I don't know about the demographics of the fishery. My sense is that a lot of the older guys are going to retire and that's going to be it. And not many people coming into the fishery, but you never know. There could be some rejuvenation.
Let me ask you this, and you can probably give me this in a one-word answer. Would you eat a farm shrimp?
Well, I would say I will.
Okay.
You're probably surprising, but I certainly prefer a wild-caught shrimp.
Okay. All right. And
I guess the answer is if there's no wild-caught shrimp, then yeah, maybe I'll eat some.
Okay. All right.
And it depends on where they're from. And, you know, some of those shrimp are treated with all sorts of things to prevent disease and quality issues. And so you can get into some shrimp that aren't particularly good if they're imported and they weren't taken care of. Okay. So it's a little bit of a rolling the dice on that. For the most part. Go ahead.
You can freeze a good South Carolina shrimp, and it tastes good when you unthaw it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. In fact, I'm probably one of the few people that will refreeze shrimp.
Never have done that now.
You know, I was taught a long time ago to put a little water in there with them. Yeah. Some people put milk in there. I don't know about that. But unfortunately, if you use Ziploc bags, the tails are going to poke holes in there, and the water's going to run out in the bottom of the freezer, and your wife's going to have a fit about it like mine does.
I have found that the little sandwich containers, the Tupperware, hard Tupperware containers.
Oh yeah.
They'll easily hold 15 to 18 good shrimp. And if you fill those things with water, well, you pop that top on, you get a little water spill out the side, those things will keep for 6, 8, 12 months, and they're really good when you unfreeze them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
God, this is going really fast. Got about 2 minutes left. Talk about the recreational fishery we have in South Carolina for shrimp.
Okay. Well, you know, traditionally we've had a seining and cast netting fishery in South Carolina going way back. And then about 1985, some guys from Florida came up with the idea of using bait and started throwing bait balls in the water, and that shrimp baiting fishery took off about 1984, 85, and got to the point where there's about 18,000 people licensed. Now it's back down around 6,000 or so.
Okay.
But it's a very effective way to catch shrimp, because these white shrimp home in on that bait with those long antennae or whatever sensory organs they're using. They can come upstream and find that bait. And then more recently, there's this deep hole baiting, deep hole fishing, where after the shrimp season or the baiting season in December, these shrimp are moving into deep holes. And these guys are using these really large cast nets especially made with a little band around the perimeter to help them stay open in deep water. And they'll do quite well with this deep hole shrimping.
Yeah. I will say, if you go shrimping, in Charleston Harbor at night. Be careful of a rogue wave across the harbor because you will go swimming. I have been there, done that. If Taylor were here, if Taylor were here, she could tell you, and her eyes would get just as big as she was then. I think she was probably 4 or 5 years old, and yeah, it was pretty exciting little event there. But I will say, you know, when you make those bait balls, you got your poles. Your poles have tags on them. You're allowed up to 10 poles any given time. Flatten your bait balls and the pancakes, or else they'll roll right along with the tide, and the shrimp won't stay where you need them to be. But it's right. A fun time. Do you in the last 15 or 20 seconds, did you do a lot of cast netting for shrimp when you were in that mood, or do you always just buy yours off the boat?
Well, I got mine off the boat mostly, but we did do a little study about 4 years where we went and cast netted up behind the Citadel there in Ashley River, and trying to assess that as maybe a way to see how we could evaluate the populations, and it seemed to work pretty good. But it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Well, Mr. Whitaker, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to be on the show with us. Folks, now you know what shrimping's all about in South Carolina. Hope you'll get the opportunity to buy some. You will take them and fix them either way. Just remember to put your seasoning on after you drain the water. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can, and we'll see you back here. Don't forget the camera. Next week, more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like